This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
I'm with Professor Chris Constellis from the University of Nottingham today. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you?
Really good, thanks. So your area of specialty is galaxy formation. That's a pretty broad area, so could you maybe just give us a little rundown on what people are interested in when they say they study galaxy formation per se? Are we looking at the whole history of a galaxy? Are we looking at what the conditions are when you start to form a galaxy or how it evolves over the course of that?
All of those, I would say, are the things that people look at. So the idea basically is that you have, in the very early universe, you have the first structures to form, which should be, we think, on the scale of very little, tiny galaxies. And somehow those galaxies grow to become the large galaxies that we see today. So a large part of galaxy formation studies is trying to figure out how that happened and to identify when it happened as well. As when did the galaxies form? When did the most massive galaxies form? When did galaxies that we see that have certain types of structures like spiral arms, like in the Milky Way, how did those form? When did those form? So there's lots of individual questions, but basically it's trying to trace from the beginning of time to today how that process happened.
Okay, so I guess it might be useful to start with a bit of a timescale. So obviously you have the beginning of structure formation, you have clouds that coalesce into stars and then coalesce into galaxies. But when do you have the first kind of objects that can legitimately be classified as galaxies as opposed to just big groups of stars?
The first galaxies would be things which consisted of objects in what we call dark matter halos. And so the idea is a theoretical idea, which is that all galaxies have dark matter halos surrounding them.
Okay.
So a galaxy would be something which exists within a dark matter halo. But the theory predicts that even the first star formation would be within these big dark matter halos, which you can think of basically as being kind of large spherical blobs of dark matter, which the galaxies kind of are born in and live their lives throughout. And so a galaxy is defined as something which basically has this dark matter associated with it.
So I guess it's all theoretical at the moment, but would you say that's necessary for the actual physical mechanism of galaxy formation, or is the jury still out on that?
It is in some ways. So the dark matter is a nice way of containing the matter that you need to form the galaxy. And the reason is because in the early universe, the gas in the universe is very hot. And so when you have hot gas, it wants to move around, it wants to, you know, fly about as hot gas will do. But if it's contained in a large gravitational potential, like a large dark matter halo, then it can't do that. It has to stay put, and that gives it time to cool down, and then when it cools down, it can form stars. And so that's kind of the theoretical basis for why we think that galaxy formation is intimately tied with the idea that dark matter is a fundamental part of the process.
Okay. So in terms of timescales now, when do we start seeing these first galaxies in the history of the universe?
We don't know quite yet when we see the first galaxies. As far as we can look back in time, we see galaxies. And we still haven't gotten to that edge where we say, okay, this is the first galaxy, or this must be one of the first galaxies to form. As far back as we can see, which is now a few hundred million years after the Big Bang, we see galaxies, and there's evidence that those galaxies have been around for a while. So we know that galaxy formation must have happened even earlier, but we haven't been able to probe that yet. But new telescopes like the James Webb Space Telescope, which will be launched by NASA in the next few years, we'll be able to hopefully probe at least a little bit further back, and maybe we'll have some definite answers for how those first galaxies, and importantly, when those first galaxies assembled. But we know it had to happen within the first, let's say, a couple hundred million years, but we don't know exactly when.
Okay. So admittedly, you can't see the first galaxies that have formed, but you can sort of observe galaxy formation processes at work. So how does that work, and what do we know about galaxy formation processes?
These first galaxies have very low masses, and we know that they have to form into the bigger galaxies that we see today. So there are several processes that we can look at in detail. One of them is merging. So one of the most common ways galaxies form is by smashing together to form a bigger galaxy. So you have two small galaxies, they smash together to form a big galaxy, and then so on and so forth, keeps going on through time, and you get bigger and bigger galaxies as the universe evolves.
Mm-hmm.
Another way is just from star formation, that if you have a lot of star formation, you can make a galaxy grow more and more through time. And the higher the star formation rate, the more stars you have. And the more stars you have, the larger your galaxy is. And so the conversion of gas into stars is probably the dominant way, and the mergers is probably the secondary way in which these galaxies are forming. But some of the questions we don't know is where the gas that forms stars and galaxies comes from, because we know that the galaxies themselves don't have enough gas, for the most part, to form all of those stars. It has to come from somewhere else. And so mm-hmm. A big question is, where does the gas in galaxies come from?
Right. And how do you attack these sorts of questions? Specifically, your research, is it more of a modeling thing where you develop theoretical models of galaxies, or is it using observations from various telescopes, space telescopes, and observing different galaxies at different stages of formation, or is it a combination of both?
It's both. So personally, I am an observer, so I look at galaxies, and I look at how they change with time. I look at how much mass is being built up through the merging, through the star formation, and then try to infer how much gas is coming in from what we call the intergalactic medium, which is the material in between galaxies, where we know that there's gas, and some of that gas can fall into the galaxy, and creating more of the galaxy, sort of a pollution of gas falling into the galaxy and forming new stars. But having said that, there is a large industry of people doing theoretical research into these same questions and looking at it in different ways based on different ways of looking at how galaxies can form based on numerical simulations or even pen and pencil on paper calculations. And, you know, we're all trying to get to the same thing, but there are two different ways of doing it. And the theoretical one certainly is just as big as the observational one.
Mm-hmm. So from an observational standpoint, well, first of all, which instruments do you use?
I use the Hubble Space Telescope is probably the most common instrument that I use. But I also use things like the Very Large Telescope in Chile, which is run by the European Southern Observatory, which is a European-wide institute for looking at optical and near-infrared astronomy. Also use telescopes like the Chandra X-ray Telescope and the Spitzer infrared telescope and a few others, but those are the main ones that I use.
So it is a combination of optical, infrared, and X-ray data that enables you to sort of build up ideas about what's going on with the galaxies.
Absolutely.
And in terms of actual observations, are you focusing on a small subset of galaxies that are particularly interesting, or are you looking at large samples and then trying to derive statistical properties? How does it work?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the way that most people do it today is the only way we can do it, which is to look at the most massive galaxies. And that's because those are the easiest to study, because they're usually the brightest galaxies. Uh-huh. At any given wavelength or any given distance. And so most studies have been done, observationally at least, on these supermassive galaxies. And that's just because we can find them and study them in great detail. And we also know that galaxies don't lose mass. So we know that if we want to trace galaxies through time, that the most massive galaxies in today's universe have to be, in some way, the descendants of the most massive galaxies that we see in the higher redshift universe. So we'd like to go to lower mass galaxies, and we will, but it's going to take better instruments and deeper exposures and deeper data than we have now.
Yeah, okay, so that makes sense. You start with the brightest stuff in the sky, that's the easiest stuff to measure. And then, so what you're saying is you essentially do a bit of detective work and work backwards to try and figure out what this particular galaxy may have looked like in the past, or whether it's the result of a merger or that sort of thing.
Right, so the issue is that you don't know for sure what is the ancestor of galaxies you see today in the universe.
Yeah.
That is, you can get a massive galaxy today, you don't know what its ancestor would look like, or even what its corresponding ancestor would look like if you go to higher redshifts. So there's a couple of ways of looking at how to tag galaxies at different redshifts. And mass is one of them, but also looking at galaxies in terms of how common they are. Like, let's say the most massive galaxy in a given volume is probably the same galaxy as a different time, which is also the most massive galaxy in that volume. So if you can do that, and people have been doing that quite a bit, then you can say, well, that galaxy is statistically going to be the ancestor of this galaxy simply because it's the 10 most massive galaxies in a given volume at this redshift or this distance versus the 10 most massive galaxies in the same volume at another distance. You can say, well, statistically, those are the same galaxies. And so this is another approach that people have been using to try to trace this process of galaxy evolution by trying to get at least the best, statistically, the same galaxies at different times.
No, yeah, so I understand you're insisting on using the word statistically because it is pretty cool to think that, oh, well, you can look at different redshifts, and it's a concrete illustration of the concept which I think most of our listeners are familiar with, that the further away you look in space, the further back in time you're looking. But obviously you're not seeing the same galaxy twice, you're just seeing sort of...
No, not at all. So the idea is that you're looking back in time, but you're looking at a different part of the universe as well. So the idea is that the universe is homogeneous in the sense that the same thing which happened, let's say, 5 billion years ago that we're looking back in the universe, that our part of the universe looked statistically the same way 5 billion years ago. And it's probably a true statement that the universe is homogeneous. Mm-hmm. All the evidence is that it is. And so it's never going to be the same galaxies. We'll never see the ancestors of the Milky Way simply because we can't go back in time. But someone, or some alien, let's say, 5 billion light years away, can look at where the Milky Way is, and we'll see the Milky Way as it looked 5 billion years ago, which statistically, the same part of the universe should look similar to us looking at them as them looking at us at this instant, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, so it is an important distinction to make because it does sound like a cool idea, but we're not practically looking looking at the same object, because that's impossible.
Right.
And so, I mean, apart from the obvious increase in knowledge just about galaxies and galaxy processes and formation processes and how galaxies evolve, are there any other applications that you can gain at a cosmological level or maybe on a larger scale by studying how the universe evolves via galaxies, I guess?
There is. So one of the ways that galaxies form is, as I said before, through mergers. Now, if the universe is very dense in the sense that the mass density is very high, such that galaxies are very close together, you'll have a lot more merging happening, and you'll get more massive galaxies as time goes on. Also, if the universe is contracting, it's not, we don't think it is, but if it is, then galaxies will get closer together, and so through time, you would see more mergers happening. If the universe is accelerating, which is what we think it's doing, then as time goes on, the galaxies will get further and further apart and mergers will become less common. And that's the broad idea behind using galaxy formation as a cosmological probe or a way to trace cosmology, simply because the way that galaxies are distributed today in terms of their formation histories and even their properties today depends a lot on the cosmology of the universe itself. If the universe's cosmology was different, then the galaxy population that we would see today or even see it in the distant universe would also look different. And so trying to figure out exactly how that works is a very new area of research and something that I'm working in now, but it's potentially a quite interesting way of looking at cosmology that hasn't been done before.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, cosmologists are always looking for more probes of their models and of their values. So that does seem like a really interesting way of doing things. So that sort of way of looking at things would require the larger samples, I'm assuming, of massive galaxies and things like that than we have today.
Absolutely. So we're really only scratching the surface in terms of the numbers of galaxies that we're seeing in the distant universe that we're sure are at in the distant universe and are sure that they have the properties that we think they do. So what we really need are larger and deeper surveys, which are coming online in the next 5 to 10 years, that'll really let us do things that we can only really dream about doing now in terms of using cosmology, using galaxies as a probe of the cosmology.
So just to kind of try and recap a little bit, how close are we today to getting a fairly complete model of galaxy formation and evolution? How well do we know, say, like a spiral galaxy like our own Milky Way, how well acquainted are we with the whole sort of start to finish process of that galaxy?
We are pretty far from that. And the reason is that galaxies do things which we really don't understand. One of them is that galaxies are much smaller in the distant universe than they are today. We don't understand how they get bigger. We don't know what the physical process is, and that's a big question. Another one is, going back to the Milky Way, is that the spiral arms of the Milky Way and other spiral galaxies, we don't have a good theory for how those are formed. We don't know how they can survive for billions of years. All the theories show that these spiral patterns should really dissipate and disappear quite quickly, but they seem to be around for billions of years, and we don't understand how that happens. And then also mention another big mystery, which is that it does appear that the most massive galaxies, the ones I was talking about earlier, tend to form much earlier than lower mass galaxies in the universe. And that really goes against the idea cosmology would predict, which is that the most massive stuff should form last. And the reason is because we think we live in a hierarchical universe such that the low mass small things form first, and then they will merge together, will accrete other things to form bigger and bigger things as time goes on. And so in that theory, the biggest structures should form last, but it appears that the biggest galaxies are forming before the lower mass systems, and we don't understand that.
Yeah, that does actually appear really weird. I hadn't realized that was the case. So there's a lot of unanswered questions and a lot of stuff left to discover. That's really cool. Lastly, just a final question, a little bit on a lighter note. Do you have a favorite galaxy?
Actually, I do. So my favorite galaxy is a galaxy called NGC 1275. And this is the central galaxy of the Perseus cluster. And this is one of the brightest X-ray sources in the sky. And this galaxy has basically everything you can imagine. It has a black hole, which is accreting gas, which is producing what we call active galactic nuclei. It's a central galaxy of this massive cluster. So it's a big galaxy, and it has evidence for merging, and it has these amazing filaments that you can see in line emission. And we don't know what causes those lines to form in the galaxy. It's not star formation, but it's some process we don't understand. So this galaxy is my favorite simply because it basically has everything you can imagine happening in a galaxy.
Awesome. That's really cool. Okay, well, thanks a lot for talking to us today, Chris.
You're welcome.